Good morning. This is the first time that I've had the privilege of preaching since the 31st of last year, and intrigues me about a new audience is that I remember the first sermon that I ever gave. Now, I preached at Cordova Community a long, long time ago, but most of y'all were not there at that point in time. My dad called me one Saturday afternoon, and he said, "Rick, I've got to be out of town tomorrow night, and I need you to preach for me." Now, this is a long time before I ever thought about preaching, okay? He wanted me to be a preacher. I had no desire at that point in time to be a preacher. And I said, "Dad, I can't do that." He said, "Yes, you can." He said, "I'll prepare, get a sermon for you. I'll lay it on my desk in the office. All I need you to do is preach." And so I said, "Okay." So as soon as lunch was over, this was in Morrilton, Arkansas. It's the other side of the universe. It's not the end of the world, but you can see it from there. And I was preaching in Plumerville, which is even further down the line than that. And so I worked all afternoon from about 1 o'clock until 5:45. It was the longest I could go and still make it to church on time. I worked on that sermon, and I got that thing up to 15 and a half minutes. All right, I can do this. So I get up, start preaching, and 2.5 minutes later, I was finished. Now, I've already been up here 2 minutes, and y'all are going, "Okay, got another half a minute, and we're finished." No, that's not the way it works. Now, anyway, I was totally embarrassed, okay? This is an old shotgun-style church building, pews on each side, middle aisle down the middle, and on either side. And it was a small church, maybe 100, 125 in attendance, probably seat 200 in the building. And that night, they probably had 70 people. And I was just totally embarrassed by the fact that I'd gone about 2.5 minutes on that sermon that I thought I could get up to 15 and a half minutes. If that weren't bad enough, the embarrassment of that, little boy on the second row with his grandmother, in a voice that you could hear all over the auditorium, he goes, "Grandma! Grandma, is that it?" Well, when the invitation song was over, I made the mistake of sitting on the front row. One of the elders gets up and goes, "Well, we've got a little bit of time tonight. We got a visiting missionary. Brother so-and-so, why don't you come up and tell us about what's going on in the mission field?" I had to sit through that, and then what I wanted to do was crawl under the pews out the back door. Couldn't do that. But anyway, things have changed since those days and those times, okay? Let me talk to you for a few minutes. I know, I promise you, I am conscious of time. Nobody's more aware of the time than I am. It's 10:10. I will have you out of here by 1 o'clock if I have to. No. I promise I won't have you here that long. No more than an hour and a half. But anyway, I want to talk to you about what I've seen develop over the last 23, 24 years that I've been in Memphis, Tennessee. And I've been around this thing called church all my life. My dad's still alive. He preaches. He'll preach this morning here in just a few minutes in Jacksonville, Arkansas, God willing. And so I've been around this thing my whole life, and I'm old, okay? I'm 10 days older than Gary Ely and 19 days older than Mary. So if you know how old they are, then you know about what range we are. I have watched the whole Christendom go from a very outwardly focused group of people. I grew up in a church. When we moved there in 19, well, it didn't matter when it was, but a long time ago, I was 8 years old. By the time we left there when I was 16, 8 years later, the church had grown from 110 to over 800 in attendance. We were baptizing people. I mean, we were dunking people left and right. It used to be so bad that I hated to have a visiting minister preacher come because I knew what was going to happen. He was going to offer an invitation song, and 50 people were going to come forward and be baptized, and that meant that lunch was going to be postponed for a while. Okay? That was what was important to me in those days and time. That church, we built a new building. The minute the Sunday we moved in, we had to start two services because we weren't thinking far enough ahead. That church went from 750 in the late 80s or early 80s to, if there are 14 people in attendance this morning, I'll eat your hat and give you 30 minutes to draw a crowd. So we've gone from very evangelistic. And the town that I grew up in was, I mean, you're either Baptist, Church of Christ, Methodist, Pentecostal, or something. Almost everybody was something. I didn't know but two people who didn't go to church in the entire high school that I was in. Two people. Today, Memphis, Tennessee, if you were to go to citydata.com, you would find out that there is a brand new category of people as of 2008. They're called the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. They ask when they did the polls, or when they do the population estimates, they ask people, what church are you associated with? In 2008, that brand new category came out, nuns. They don't associate with any church, any Sunday, any given time, point, or place. What would you guess? Just guessing, what would you say are the nuns in Memphis, Tennessee? 80%. 10%. So we go from 80 to 10. No higher than 25. There are 47.5% nuns in Memphis, Tennessee. Which means that when you're standing in line at Walmart or Kroger or wherever you shop, just start counting people in front of you. If there are 10 people in front of you, odds are half of them don't go to church anywhere. They don't have any association with any group of people. Now, folks, I have been around this long enough to know that if people don't know Jesus, if people don't know Jesus, if people don't have a relationship with Jesus, they're lost. They're lost. And what bothers me more than that, that's bad enough, is that I sometimes act like I don't care. I'm not knocking doors. I'm not talking to people regularly. I want to. I seriously want to. I am working hard at being better at getting acquainted with people so I can find out, are you going to church? If yes, God bless you. If no, let's become friends. Let me work somehow to get more acquainted with people who don't know Jesus. Now, let me take it one step further. Out of the 47%, 47.5% that don't know Jesus, I promise you, when the pollsters called and said, where do you guys go to church? One of them said, or the person answered phone, it said something like this. Well, you know, Grandma was Baptist. I guess we're Baptist. Or, you know, Grandma was Christian church. I guess we must be Christian church. Or Grandma was Pentecostal. We must be Pentecostal. They go to church generally. The other probably 30% go to church twice a year. I call them Christers. They come on Christmas and Easters, or CEO, Christmas and Easter only type Christians. They darken the door twice a year. That means they do not have a relationship with Jesus. Now, folks, I'm not trying to be a downer. What I'm trying to get us to realize is that if this message of love were ever needed, it is needed today. It is needed today more than any other time in history. It is needed. The reason Barry and the reason Gary and Steve are asking you to invite people to church is because there is a great percentage of people who don't go to church anywhere, have no affiliation with any church. And one of the ways for them to get acquainted outside of meeting a Christian is to come to a church that preaches and teaches Jesus. So when I invite people, I ask them, number one, do you go to church anywhere? If they say yes, then I say, God bless you. Do you like where you're going? Oh, yeah, we like it fine. I'm not going to try to get them to come to Cordova Community Church or any other church that I'm in. What I'm going to try to find are those people who don't know Jesus so that I can get them into a relationship with Jesus. I want Memphis, Tennessee. I want the United States. By the way, we're a high percentage out of that 47.5%. If you go to California, if you go to New York, if you go to Florida, it's somewhere around 70% that claim no affiliation with any church. I just got finished preaching in Jonesboro. I was there for a year and a half. And I did the city data. That's what I do when I go in and do any church consulting, is look at the demographics of the city. Jonesboro, Arkansas, a church on every corner, 48% are not affiliated with any church. And I talk to the people at Jonesboro, and I'd say, you know that probably a third of your neighbors are Christians and the rest aren't? And they would always say, well, we want to get those people from the Baptist church up on the hill. They got enough people. We need them to come down here. No. No. What we need are lost people who don't know Jesus so that we can bring them into a relationship with Jesus. Okay? So enough of my soapbox. Folks, it's time. It's time for us as Christians to wake up and realize that I'm responsible. I'm not talking about Rick the preacher. I'm talking about Rick the Christian. I'm responsible for helping lost people know Jesus. And one of the ways that I can do that is by loving them. Have you ever had anybody that believed in you? I've had a couple of people in my life that have had a big influence on me, and I didn't realize it until they were dead and gone. Until I get a little older anyway. One of them was Mrs. Brandon. Miss Brandon was my ninth grade English teacher. Now, I grew up in Arkansas. I can talk about Arkansas all I want. I still don't know English very well, but I sure didn't, because what I spoke was Arkansas, okay? Miss Brandon, when I was in the ninth grade, Miss Brandon was about 4.5 feet tall, and she could swing a boat paddle. That's back in the days when we could correct people. She could swing a boat paddle that would make me cry. I never got there, but she could do it. Miss Brandon had the respect of every ninth grade male on campus. I'm telling you. And her husband was 6'2", and he was about 300 pounds, was one of the coaches for the football team. And if she weren't bad enough, he was. Okay? So Miss Brandon, right at the end of the year, she gives me this. Come here, Rick. And I thought, oh, what have I done? I'm just sweating bullets, you know, knowing that Miss Brandon's going to wear my fanny out for something. Don't know what it is, but I just know she's going to do it. Miss Brandon goes, Rick Wood, I want to tell you, you're not stupid, you're just lazy. And I said, well, Miss Brandon, what do you mean? She said, well, you're lazy. You could be an A student if you wanted to be an A student. Matter of fact, I think so much of you and what your potential is, that I'm going to put you in with the brainiacs. What do they call that now? AP. I'm going to put you in with all those people, okay? Now, I'm a C student at that point in time. C student, and I'm going, oh, my goodness. So I walked into the English class the first year, my sophomore year in high school. Here are all these brainiacs in there. Not a one of them played football, which is important to me because I played football. Not a one of them played basketball, which was important to me because I played basketball. All of them were just big, you know, their brains were like this. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, Miss Brandon, you're nuts. There is no way. There's no way I can compete with these people. Well, I could. I just didn't believe that I could. When I finished my doctoral work at Southern Seminary, I'm not bragging on Rick, I'm just telling you, Miss Brandon is one of those people I would love to have had there and said, Miss Brandon, look, thank you. Thank you for believing in me. The second one was Hank McDaniels. Hank was a teacher at Freed Hardeman for years. Hank was totally opposite me. Now, we met in 1967. I was between my junior and senior year in high school. And, yeah, for all you younger folks here, I'm old, okay? I'm old. Now, remember, Gary and Mary are the same age, but they're not old. I am. But anyway, I was primed for football. I worked out every day. I weighed 195 pounds. 40, you know, I could give you my measurements, all that stuff, like that matters anyway, because now it's just the opposite. But anyway, I wanted to be a bison bull at Harding University. To be a bison bull meant that you had to bench press 350 pounds. You had to deadlift your body weight. And all I was going through all that routine to be that kind of guy. Here comes Hank. Hank just got out of the Navy. Hank was about 5'9" and pudgy. Okay? Hank was an artsy kind of person. Now, again, I'm not knocking artsy people because I've got some in my family. I love artsy people. But back then, I could have cared less about it. Hank, for some reason, he was about, I guess he's probably in his early 20s at that point in time, took a liking to this boy, okay, as we'd say in Arkansas. He just, for some reason, he liked me. And Hank and I spent the summer getting acquainted. I remember one of the times I was in crafts with my kids, my boys, and we were doing something plaster Paris. You know, I was killing time till I could go run or go do swimming or go do something, go on a hike. But Hank happened to be there. And I did my plaster Paris thing, painted it on the front. Y'all would have been proud of me. I was artsy that day. It was really nice. And over the back, I put the date, and I put, I want to be a bison bull. That was what I was after. You know, that was my go-to thing. Hank grabbed a ink pen or a little paintbrush, dipped it in the paint, and put plus an elder in the church. I looked at him and I said, okay. Not going to happen, but okay. Because I knew some elders. Because I'd grown up with their kids, right? The reason I'm the way I am is because I grew up with all the elders and deacons' kids. I was bad enough to be a preacher's kid, but put up with the elders and deacons' kids is really bad. Hank believed in Rick Wood. The last time I got to see him was in the 80s, and Hank looked at me and he said, Rick, for the first time, I see peace in your eyes. Well, the peace that he saw was I found Jesus, okay? I grew up in the church, missed Jesus, but I found Jesus. And Hank said, brother, I am so happy for you. I believe in you. I put my confidence in what your ability is about. I tried to call Hank not too long ago. Well, it's been several years now. And Hank, I found out he was diagnosed with cancer. I waited too late. Hank died right after I called. He was just in such a weakened condition. But Hank believed in me. Even when I didn't deserve to be believed in. That was the last thing on my mind, was to be an elder, to be anything in the church. But Hank believed in me. Miss Brandon believed in me. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because in 1 Corinthians, you have a church that is disturbed from beginning to end. I think this is where I'm supposed to. Right in the middle of a disruptive group of people, Paul writes these words, that love is the most significant part of Christianity. Without love, I'm nothing. I'm like a cymbal that's clanging. No rhyme, no reason to it. I'm not anything. And then he goes down in verse 7, the one we're on, and he says, love always trust. What version are we reading up here? Yeah, always trust. Some versions would say believes. Matter of fact, there's a ton of stuff out there that just makes you wonder which one it is. I don't know. I know the Greek word is to believe. That's the word that's translated. But it carries with it this idea of trust. And so Paul is writing to a group of people who from beginning to end have problems. Right in the middle, well, not right in the middle, but close to the middle, he drops this love bomb on them. And says, you want to know what's significant? It's not speaking in tongues. That's what the context is. Chapter 12, everybody's got the Spirit, but some say, my spiritual gift's better than yours. Mine's bigger, it's better, and more pronounced. Paul would say, no. As Barry prayed this morning, this needs to be about Jesus. This needs to be about God. And that's why that love passage is in there. If you looked at the different versions, I'm not going to take the time to do all the different versions. There's about 40 or 50 I looked at. The one I like the most, it has nothing to do with me liking the most, has everything to do with, I think, the message that's conveyed, and that is this. Love always believes the best in other people. Love always trusts the best in other people. When it doesn't look like you would want to think that, Paul says you always have to believe the best. Mrs. Brandon believed the best about me, and I am so grateful. Hank McDaniels believed the best about me, and I am so grateful that they did, because even when I didn't look like much, not that I look like anything today, but even when I didn't look like much, I sure didn't back then. So when we come to thinking about all of this, what are you trying to say? Well, here are a couple things I want to say. Now, I got one point, and I'll be finished here in about 45 minutes. But anyway, I just saying if you're all paying attention. I have one point, but Paul is talking about the ideal here. You understand what the word, I had to think through the word idea, because he's saying this is the ideal circumstance. This is the ideal situation. This is the way it ought to be. Not the way it often is, but this is the way it ought to be. Paul had to learn this. You say, what do you mean Paul had to learn it? Just like everybody else, he had to learn how to love. If you don't believe me, turn to Acts chapter 15. Acts chapter 15. And notice what happens. Paul has been converted, been brought into Christianity, and a fellow by the name of Barnabas befriends him. They start working together on missionary trips. In chapter 15, they've done such a great job bringing the Gentiles into this thing called Christianity. It was a Jewish thing, the Jewish thought. They brought all these Gentiles in, and they've done such a good job that they were upset that they weren't asking them to be circumcised according to the law of Moses. They have to go to Jerusalem and have this big powwow with the elders, and the elders give them their blessing and send them on their way. Now notice what happens in the last few verses of chapter 15. After some days, Paul and Barnabas, Paul said to Barnabas, let's go back and go to all these churches that we've been to, and let's talk to them about this, what's just happened. And it said, now Barnabas wanted to take with them John Mark, John who's also called Mark, but Paul thought that it was best not to have him go with them. So they get into this big fight. In other words, Paul's not seeing the best, he's not looking at the best in John Mark, he's looking at the worst in John Mark. John Mark had left them on one missionary journey. And he's upset at this young guy, and he says, no, I'm not going to take John Mark. Barnabas said, I'm going to take him. He needs to go. Let me tell you about it. And Barnabas is one of those guys that he wants to see the best in people. They have this big heated dispute, this argument, and Paul goes one way with Silas, and Barnabas goes the other way with John Mark. Do you know what Paul would say about John Mark later? By the way, Timothy, if you find John Mark, bring him because he's useful to me. This is something Paul learned. This is not something that comes natural. Everybody in here will have to learn how to love. And you learn that by going one place. To have the love that believes, it comes from one source. It's got to come from one source and only one source, and that's God. There is no way to get to this kind of love without lifting up God in your life and in my life until we become like Him. It's lifting up, it's finding my power source in God. There are some people, the last church I preached at, I'm not going to tell you the guy's name because I don't think anybody would know him, but it doesn't matter. But this guy was older than I am, and I know for you teenagers in here going, hey, nobody older than you, but there he is. And Billy, well, I'll almost give you his full name. He was a... I have given my wife, y'all need to meet my lovely wife Lainey over here, I have given my wife permission that if I become a grumpy old man, just take a gun and shoot me, okay? This guy was a grumpy old man. Have you ever been around grumpy old men? Yeah, I'm thinking, dude, I mean, I brought up the homeless situation in Jonesboro. Well, them people ought to go get them a job. Now, this is just the way he talked. And I'm going, well, brother, do you know anything about homeless people? No, I just know they ought to go get a job. I said, well, what if they don't have a car? Well, let them walk. I walked when I was, you know, I just think, oh, my gosh, if any outsider ever came into this building with you in the presence, they would immediately turn around and walk out, okay? Oh, I did every, and so I prayed, God, help me be a love, help me see the best in that man. There are some people that it's hard to see the best in, right? Would you agree with that? I mean, it's tough. And so all of us have to learn this, and there's one source, one way that this comes about, and that is by lifting up Jesus, by lifting up God until we get to know Him. So, Paul would say, well, Paul didn't say this, Rick said this, therefore, plug into God. If you want to be loving, if you care anything at all about being loving, plug into God. Now, how do we do that? I've been around a long time, and I've listened to a lot of sermons, and there comes a point in time where a preacher tells me what I ought to do, but he didn't tell me how to do it. You ever had that? And I'll write in the morning, you know, all right, if I got an outline, YBH, yes, but how? Well, all right, Rick, if we're going to be loving, we got a power source in God, and you're telling me to plug into God, how do I do that? Okay? Is that fair? How do I do that? Well, here's some ways that I've found out how to do that. Number one, Paul said twice in the letter to the folks in Corinth, number one, in chapter, I think it's chapter 11, verse 1, imitate me as I imitate who? Jesus, as I imitate Christ. Imitate me as I imitate Christ. There's your power source. If you find somebody who imitates Christ, log into them as long as they're imitating Christ. So Paul says, I'm doing everything I can. If you read any of his books, he will tell you, Drew read part of one this morning, he will tell you, Jesus is my power source. Jesus is who I want to be like. Jesus is the essence of what God's all about. So one of the ways to do that is to look at people who lift up Jesus. And then in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18, it says this, we all with unveiled face behold the glory of the Lord and are being transformed into the same image from one degree to another, for that this comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. You and I must lift up Jesus until we become like Him. Now, how do we do that? Well, there are four books that talk about Jesus. What would you say they are? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Those four books. And so I try to center all of my reading of the text in those four books. I do everything I can centered around those four books. So just imagine you're drawing a rectangle, and inside the rectangle is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Outside the rectangle, you've got four circles that go on the edges of the rectangle. You've got Old Testament passages, you've got Revelation, you've got the book of Acts, and you've got the other parts of the New Testament. And so as I go through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I try to move from one of those to an Old Testament passage or to another book in the New Testament or to the book of Revelation. I try to do that so that I keep Jesus at the center of all that I do. Now, there is no substitute for being in the text. You will not find Jesus other than people's lives who've been in the text, other than in the text. So you've got to get in the text. You and I have got to be in the Word. We've got to be people of the Word. I wish it were true. I heard a story years ago about a judge who was doing, there was a court case going on, and he said, told the bailiff, he said, swear in your next witness. He said, well, Judge, I can't find my Bible. He goes, anybody here in this audience from the Restoration Movement? The guy stood up and said, yeah, I go to the Christian church. He said, get up here. He said, put your hand on his head. It's like having the Bible there. That's what I want said of Rick. Well, if you cut me, I want to bleed Jesus. If you cut me, I want to ooze Jesus. That's how you get to this passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You and I will not get there without knowing, without an intimate relationship with Jesus. Now, I grew up in a church that loved Acts. I like Acts, but I tell you what I like as well. That's Luke. Because Luke tells me about Jesus, Acts tells me about the people who fell in love with Jesus and what happened. If you and I fall in love with Jesus, we won't have to worry about filling this building. People will come, will say, what is it that's different about you? Well, let me tell you. The difference is, his name is Jesus. And so we've got to center in on Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's got to be the essence of who we are. We've got to, like Paul, I want to know him and the power of his resurrection. Two stories and I'm finished. I had a friend who was one of my instructors a long time ago that I met up with several years later, and he told me a story about a fellow that he had converted, that had become a Christian in Africa. Tex spent lots of time in Africa, so he would go back once or twice a year and speak in various places in Africa. He was speaking one time in this central city. When he finished, one of the guy who had become a Christian came up to him and said, hey, I'm the only Christian in my village. Will you come speak to my village? Tex goes, sure. So Tex said, we got in the Range Rover and take off out for the village. And when we get there, the people are lined up. And he's thinking, they're here to cheer us. And then he notices everybody's got two rocks, and they got rocks beside them. And when they drive into the village, they start pounding the vehicle with rocks. And Tex says, where do you live? He said, I live all the way down to the end. You know, that village plummeted that vehicle, and they got to the end where the guy lived, and he said, I didn't get any sleep that night because I thought somebody in the village was going to kill me. He said, the first chance I got, I left. I come back 4 years later, and the guy says, you need to come back to my village. He said, not on your life, buddy. No, I'm not going through that experience again. He said, oh, it's different. This time, when they enter the village, everybody's cheering. And he looked at the guy and he said, is this the same group of people that we met 4 years ago? And he said, no, same people, but different attitude. And he said, well, what happened? And the guy said, well, I knew that if I was ever going to reach this village that I lived in, I was going to have to figure out a way to share Jesus with them. I was going to have to figure out a way to love, to plug into the power of God, so that I could live and love these people. And so if somebody needed their garden tilled, I went out before I planted mine and helped them plant theirs. If somebody needed their livestock taken care of, I went out and took care of their livestock. And he said, I did all these things. When they needed water, I'd go to get water with them. And he said, I loved them. In other words, he saw the potential for good that was in those people that wasn't present the first time they walked into that village. And everybody in there had become a believer in Jesus because this man said, I will live 1 Corinthians 13 before people. I will see the best in them in the toughest of circumstances, and I will bring Jesus. Heard another story. Drew, you guys can come on up if you want to. Heard another story about a Chinese Christian who lived up on a hill. And in China, I'm told, almost everybody has a rice paddy of some kind, a field. And they, every morning, he would fill his rice field with water. And the people below him, every afternoon when he came in, theirs would be filled and his would be empty. And he said this went on for days, weeks. And he thought, what am I going to do? Every time I fill mine, while I'm gone, they come in and break the dam down and fill theirs. And so what he started doing was filling theirs first and then his. Now, folks, when we become those kind of people, teenagers, when you guys at school become that kind of person, when the bully or somebody who is a problem to you, when you lift up Jesus, they may or may not be attracted to that, but that's what's important. You want to know how to convert your high school? Live like Jesus. People at work every day, you want to know how to... Now, folks, again, this is the ideal. This is easier to talk about than it is to do it, right? Would you agree with that? I mean, it's easy sitting here in this nice, comfortable building. It's okay there. Well, sometimes it is. If you're mad at somebody, it's not, but... most of the times it is. When you're a work situation and you've got this person who is a pain in the neck, and that's probably high on the anatomy, what do you do? You try to see the good. You try to see. Now, will everybody respond? Of course not. That's not my problem. That's their problem. Okay? I need to. We need to. And then when we come together, it's to encourage each other to be more Christ-like, to go out and live that way before people. I promise you, if we will start meeting people where they are, helping them figure out what they need and start meeting those needs, if we will be like the African gentleman who turned his village around, if we will be like the Chinese man who filled the land of somebody else first, then we can gain an audience. The reason we don't have an audience today is because we're not practicing a love that believes. I am so grateful for Miss Brandon and for Hank McDaniels, who believed in me when I didn't deserve to be believed in. But we've all seen people like that, right? Somebody sees the good in them, they get shaved off the rough edges, and all of a sudden, Lord willing, this Thursday I will see a gentleman who was one of my instructors when I was at Sunset School of Preaching a long, long time ago. And I watched Jim turn from the biggest legalist that ever walked the face of this earth to the most loving, compassionate, Christ-centered man I've known. First semester at school, Jim came in one morning, little Irishman, he came in one morning, and I can't imitate his brogue, but he said, "All right, men, I stayed up to 4 a.m. studying this morning, and if you're not willing to do that, you need to quit school right now." I started packing my books up, because I wasn't going to do that. I thought, well, all right, I'll hang in, and I came back over to the summer, and here's this guy who's loving, who's compassionate, who is filled with joy. And I said, "Jim, what happened?" He said, I met Jesus. Folks, I don't care how old you are, how young you are, it's time for us to meet Jesus and live Him. Love believes. Love trusts. Love wants to see the best in everybody. And it's hard, I know it's hard, but we got to lift up Jesus until we become like Him. If you need to respond this morning, I'll be right over here during the invitation time. If you want prayers, whatever, if you want to be baptized, I'd love to see the pool be used. Whatever your needs are, if you have needs, come see me or come see somebody who will be here to talk about Jesus. God bless you. Thank you.